Just also from Seattle, Washington, September 30th, 1968. In this lecture, Srila Prabhupada speaks about Vrindavan, and he really tells or explains the secret for both pleasing Krishna, and it's quite an open secret. A secret for pleasing Krishna, for entering into Sri Vrindavan Dham. It is the simplest thing. It is the way to awaken from the dream of materialistic life and enter the spiritual world. So simple, but so difficult on the other hand. Why? Because of this Maya is very hard to get out of. Very, very difficult. It won't release its grasp over us, a very tight hold over us. Until what?
We surrender,
yes.
We let go.
But what does that mean? What does that surrendering and letting go actually mean? Because it's so easy to say, all we have to do is surrender. We have to let go. We have to become detached. What do we have to surrender? What do we have to rid ourselves of? What do we have to become detached from? Yes. But how not theoretically come to this point? Theoretical understanding is required. But to the depths of our own experience of self-identity, who we are, to the depths of who we feel we are completely, we have to be able to give ourselves to Krishna. We have to, on one hand, give up something, our false sense of being the center of the universe, and give ourselves to Krishna fully. And those of us who are unfortunately conditioned in the material world, it takes some time. But Krishna is so kind. And this is another reason why the process of bhakti is so, so far superior to any other process, jnana, yoga, anything, because those other processes are ascending. They depend upon our own abilities. And yes, we have to use our abilities. We have to use our intelligence. We have to use our strength. Whatever we have, whatever we are, we have to use that in Krishna's service. But our advancement does not simply depend on that, because there is something extra that bhakti awards one, and that is Krishna's kindness and his care. The impersonalists think that Krishna is impersonal. So, yeyetam mam prapadyante, what does that mean? What does that verse indicate? What does it indicate? That he reciprocates with us according to what we want. So if we treat him as impersonal, he will treat us impersonally. He won't give us any special care. And if we give him special care, offer to him something, anything, patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam, yomam, bhaktya, just a little bit. And the first day when Satyananda Maharaj was giving his first class, he mentioned Draupadi calling out to Krishna. What name did Draupadi call out? Govinda. How many times? How many? Once, Govinda. One time with a full heart. And Krishna says, for that I am forever in her debt and I cannot repay her. That is the nature of Krishna. So is it better to be an impersonalist or a personalist? Aside from the philosophy Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan, it's the highest. Never mind, it's the highest even. But Krishna is so wonderful. Yes. Because we are so insignificant, but we don't like to feel that way about ourselves. And the current psychology is, what about your self-esteem? You have to feel that you're most significant, to have courage to get on in the world. You have to put yourself in increasingly levels of illusion. But no. A devotee, okay, Krishna, I am insignificant, but by your grace I can do this, I can do this a little bit. Please let me offer you. And that comes up in the Bhagavatam, and we shall read that. The peacocks, what do they have? They have their feathers, and they dance for Krishna. And Krishna takes those feathers after they're dancing. And to show his appreciation for their gift, they have feathers. They don't have anything else. And he places that upon his head and in his hair. What do you have? What do you have? Please make that an offering to Krishna. If you can dance, dance for Krishna. If you have feathers, offer your feathers. If you can sing, sing. Listen to what Prabhupada says. Let's see if I can get it going just right. Does everyone have their sheet? This is in 1968. The movement was just beginning to bud. Little bit, little growth.
A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Recorded on September 30th, 1968, in Seattle.
Can you hear all right?
So, our program is to worship with love and devotion Govind, the original person, Govindam Adi Purusha. This is Krishna consciousness. We are teaching people to love Krishna. That's all. Our program is to love, to place your love in the proper place. That is our program. Everyone wants to love, but he is being frustrated on account of his love being misplaced. People do not understand it. They are being taught, first of all, you love your body. Then, little extended, you love your father and mother. Then, love your brother and sister. Then, love your society. Love your country. Love the whole human society, humanity. But all these extended love, so-called love, will not give you satisfaction. Unless you reach to the point to love Krishna, then it is satisfied. That night, if you throw a stone on some reservoir of water on the lake, there immediately begins a circle. The circle expands. And expanding, when the circle touches the shore, it stops. Unless the circle reaches the bank or the shore of the reservoir of the water, it goes on increasing. I love my society, I love my country, I love my human nation, and then living entity is gone. But if you directly touch Krishna, then everything is there. It is so nice. Because Krishna means all attractive, includes everything. Why everything? Because Krishna is descendant. Just like in a family. If you love your father, then you love your brother, sister, the servant of your father, the home of your father, the wife of your father, namely your mother, everyone. The central point is past. This is a good example. Similarly, if you love Krishna, then your love will be expanded everywhere. Another example, just like if you love a tree, the leaves, the flowers, the branches, the trunks, the twigs, everything, you simply pour water on the root. Then your loving affairs for the tree will automatically serve. If you love your countrymen, if you want to see that your countryman becomes educated, advanced economically and mentally, physically, then what you do? You pay tax to the God. Don't hide your income tax. You simply pay tax to the central government, and it will be distributed to the education department, to the defense department, to the hygiene department, everything. Therefore, these are good examples. But actually, if you want to love everything, then you try to love Krishna. You will not be frustrated, because that is complete. When your love is complete, then you will not be frustrated. That you have got complete feeding. If you are satisfied with food completely, then you say, I am satisfied. I don't want any more. So this Krishna consciousness movement is very simple. Very simple. Inaugurated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially, although it is very old, the Vedic scripture, but it's still taking from the historical point of view, this Krishna consciousness movement is, since Lord Krishna appeared on the surface of this planet 5,000 years ago, and later on, Lord Chaitanya 500 years ago, he expanded that movement of Krishna consciousness. Lord Chaitanya's mission is Aradhya Bhagavan Vrijasasthana. If you want to love, if you want to be subordinate, everyone is subordinate. This is false. Everyone wants to be independent, but nobody is independent. Everyone is subordinate. Nobody can say that I am independent. Can you say, any one of you, that you are independent? Is there anybody? No. Everyone is subordinate. Willingly, not by force, everyone becomes subordinate. The girl says, boy, I want to become your servant. Willingly. Similarly, boy says to a girl, I want to be a servant. Why? That is my nature. I want to be subordinate. because my nature is to be stubborn. But I do not know. I prefer, I reject this subordination, and I accept another subordination. But subordination is there. Just like a worker. He works here, he finds some better wages another place. He goes there. But that does not mean he becomes independent. He's subordinate. So, Lord Chaitanya teaches that if you want to be subordinate, or if you want to worship somebody, who worships somebody? Unless you feel somebody is better than you, why should you worship? I worship my horse because I think that he is greater than me. He gives me wages, salary, monthly, $600. Therefore, I must worship him, I must need him. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that you become subordinate of Krishna. Aradhya Bhagavan Vidyasatayana. If you want to worship, worship Krishna. And next, Tadhyana Vrindavanam. If you want to worship somebody, then love Krishna, worship Krishna, or his place, Vrindavan. Because everyone wants to love some place. That is now nationalism, some country. Somebody says, I love this American land. Somebody says, I love this Chinese land. Somebody says, I love the Russian land. So everyone wants to love some land. Bhumijjati. People are naturally inclined to love some material land. Generally, where he is born, he tries to love. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that because you are inclined to love some person, you love Krishna. Because you want to love some land, you love Brahma. Aradhya Bhagavan Vidyasatanaya Stadhyama Vrindavan. But if somebody says, how to love Krishna? I cannot see Krishna. How to love Krishna? Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Ranga Kachi Upasana Vrajabhu Bhargavi Kavita. If you want to learn, if you want to know the process of worshipping Krishna, loving Krishna, just try to follow the footprints of the gopis. Gopis. The gopis then love the highest perfectional love. Ranganakasi Upasana. There are different kinds of love or worship in the world. The beginning is, O God, give us our daily bread. This is the beginning. When we taught to love God, if we are instructed that we go to temple, we go to church and pray to God for your necessities, for your grievances, that is the beginning. But that is not pure love. The pure love, perfection of pure love, can be found among the gopis. That is the example. How they love Krishna? They love Krishna. Krishna went to, Krishna was a cowherd boy. With his friends, other cowherd boy, he used to go with his cows in the pasturing ground, the old day. that was the system. Because people at that time were satisfied with land and towns. That's all. That is the means of solution of all economic problems. They are not industrial. They are not servant of anyone. Simply get production from the land and take meat from the town, the whole food problem solved. So, Krishna used to go to the pasturing ground, and the gopis at home, they were girls or women, they, women or girls, were not allowed to work. That is the basic system. They should keep at home, and they should be given protection by the father, by the husband, or elderly son. They are not meant for going out, so they kept themselves at home. But Krishna was, say, miles away with the pasturing ground, and the gopis at home thinking, oh, Krishna's feet, is so soft, now he is walking on the rough grounds, the particles of stones are pricking his soul, so he must be feeling some pain. In this way thinking, they used to cry. Yes. Krishna is nicer. And what Krishna is feeling, they are simply thinking of that feeling. Krishna may be feeling like, this is love. This is love. They are not asking Krishna, my dear Krishna, what you have brought from your pasturing ground? How is your pocket? Let me see. No. Simply thinking of Krishna, how Krishna is satisfied. They need to dress themselves because he can go before Krishna with nice dress. He'll be happy to see. Generally, a boy or a man becomes happy to see his lover or wife nicely dressed. That is, therefore, it is the nature of the woman to dress nice. And according to Vedic system, a woman should dress very nicely just to satisfy her husband. That is the Vedic system. If her husband is not at home, then she should not dress nicely. There are women. Poshita Bhutrika. There are different dresses of women. By seeing the dress, one will understand what she is. One can understand by seeing the dress that she is unmarried girl. One can see simply by the dress that she is married wife. One can see by the dress that she is widow. One can see by the dress by that she is prostitute. So, dress is so important. So, Poshita Bhutrika. So, we are not going to discuss about the social, but we are discussing about love affairs of Krishna. So, gopis, Krishna and gopi, the relationship was so intimate and so analyzed that Krishna himself admitted, my dear gopis, it is not in my power to repay about your loving it. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He became bankrupt. That, my dear gopis, it is not possible for me to repay your debt which you have created by loving me. So that is the high purpose. Ganga Kasi Upasana Bhutava Bhutava. I am just describing the mission of Lord Chaitanya. He giving us instruction, his mission, that the only lovable object is Krishna. and his land now. And the process of loving him is a real example, the gopi. Nobody can reach. There are different stages of devotees. And gopis are supposed to be on the highest platform. And amongst the gopis, the supreme is Radha. Therefore, nobody can surpass the love of Radha. Rangmatadit upasana, vajavadu bandhanija kalpita. Srimadam bhagavatam mamalam purana. Now, to learn this, all these signs of loving God, that must be some book, some authoritative literature. Yes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Srimadam bhagavatam mamalam purana. The Srimadam bhagavatam is a spotless description of understanding how to love God. There is no other description. From the beginning, it is teaching how to love God. Those who have studied Srimadam Bhagavatam, the first verse in the first canto is Jannadna Sadataha Satyam Param Bhumahi. The beginning is that I am offering my unalloyed devotion unto the Supreme, from whom everything has emanated, the Mother Citizen. So, it is a, you know, it is a great description. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you want to learn how to love God or Krishna, then study Srimad Bhagavatam. And to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, the preliminary study is Bhagavad Gita. So, studying Bhagavad Gita to understand the real nature or identification of God and yourself and your relationship, and then when you are little conversant, when you are prepared that yes, Krishna is the only lovable object, then next book you take Srimad Bhagavatam and you go. Then just like Bhagavad Gita is entrance. That's like students, they pass their school examination, then enters into the college. So, you pass your school examination, how to love God, by studying Bhagavad Gita as it is, then study Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is graduate study. And when you are still further advanced, postgraduate, then study teachings of Lord Krishna. So there is no difficulty. The fact is that we have to learn how to love Krishna. The direction is there, and method is there, and we are trying to serve you as far as possible. We are sending our boys to the streets and the town to invite you. And if you kindly take up this opportunity, then your life will be successful. Prema Pumartamaha. Because this human form of life is meant for developing love for God. Because in all other life, we have loved, we have loved our children, we have loved our wife, we have loved our nest in the bird's life, in the beast's life. There is love. There is no necessity of teaching a bird or beast how to love the children. That is no necessity. Because that is natural. To love your home, to love your country, to love your husband, to love your children, to love your wife, so on, God. All this love, more or less, there are in the animal kingdom. But that sort of love will not give you happiness. It will be frustrated. Because this body is temporary. Therefore, all these loving affairs are also temporary. And they are not pure. They are simply a perverted reflection of the pure love that is existing between you and Krishna. So if you want really peace, if you really want satisfaction, if you don't want to be confused, then try to love Krishna. This is the plain problem. Then your life will be the Krishna consciousness movement is not something manufactured to mislead and bluff the people. It is a most authorized movement, Vedic literature, the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedanta Sutra, Puranam, and many, many great saintly persons adopted this means, and the main example is Lord Chaitanya. He sees picture, he is in the dancing mode. So, we have to learn this art. Then our life will be saved. You haven't got to practice anything artificial and speculating and bother your brain and so on. See, you have the instinct for loving others. That is an instinctive, natural. Simply, we are misplacing love and therefore we are frustrated, confused. So, if you don't want to be confused, if you don't want to be frustrated, then try to love Krishna and you feel yourself how we are making progress in peacefulness, in happiness, in everything that you want. Thank you.
So, Arjuna was not a coward.
Oh, that's tomorrow. One other thing I would like to play right now. In 1972, Srila Prabhupada came to Hong Kong. And we had a little temple. And we had some Chinese-style carved chair that was serving as a vyasasan for Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was staying in a hotel, the Park Hotel, which is very close to the current Hong Kong temple in Chimchatsui. And I walked Prabhupada into the temple, and everyone was rushing to get everything ready. Not everyone, there was only a few people. And there was a tape playing when Prabhupada walked in, and it was a tape of Srila Prabhupada singing. And Prabhupada, I gestured, and Prabhupada sat down on the Vyasasan, and I began to greet him by performing arti while the tape of Prabhupada singing was playing. And this is what it was. This very tape.
Radha. Radha Krishna Bala 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 Le Kabahi Hey Shikha Diya
at some point at the end of this song, it breaks, and then Prabhupada gives an explanation of the song. So as I was doing arti right in the middle, it went into Prabhupada's explanation when he was speaking, with him sitting on me on the chair, and then he told me to stop the arti and just turn off the tape. Then he began to speak. But this song is so nice. This is by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. How many years ago? 110 years ago. 110 years ago, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote this. Because the question is, we heard Prabhupada in that lecture in Seattle saying that we should love Krishna and we should learn how to do that to the highest level by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, that is the book, but also without the mercy and instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the methodology given by Mahaprabhu, practically speaking, it would be impossible, because Kali Yuga is so difficult. Everyone's consciousness is so disturbed. Everyone is full of so much anxiety. Everyone has so many insecurities, so many extreme desires. Rather than loving, everyone is just thinking, my problem, you're telling me to give love. My problem is I never got any love. So therefore, I should center around giving myself love, and then when I get what I need, then maybe I can give some love to someone else. So everyone is so, Kali Yuga, so self-absorbed. So what is the methodology? So Prabhupada again and again, he's saying, he was very satisfied singing the opening lines again and again and again, very sweetly. Radha Krishna Bolo Re Sobhai. Sobhai means everyone. Everyone chant Radha and Krishna. Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are dancing all over the land of Nadia, giving this teaching to all. O brothers, needlessly under the control of Maya, you suffer and are carried away by her waves, sometimes floating and sometimes sinking in this ocean of illusion. If you have this faith, Jeev Krishna Das, Abish Ras, Kole, To Ar Dukanai, Kole in Bengali is the conditional tense, if you have this faith, Krishna Das, that I am only Krishna's servant and everything else is illusion. Kale to ar dukonai, no more miseries. There will be no more misery if one is faithful to this concept that the soul, that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. There will be no more miseries. And if fixed in that consciousness, when you chant the holy name of Krishna, your body will shiver in ecstasy, and your eyes will shed tears in love of God. This is what I say. Three simple stanzas that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has instructed us in. Chant Radha and Krishna, the third one, and always live in the association of devotees. Radha Krishna Bolo, Sange Chalo. That is the only request I beg of you, Bhaktivinoda says. All dangers go far away when I sing that holy name of the Lord. This is the methodology of the Krishna consciousness movement. Very simple. We try to sing Hare Krishna, chant Krishna's names always, live in the association of devotees, study Srimad Bhagavatam, preach, take whatever tendencies we have. Grihe tako, mane tako. So whatever situation one is in, just chant Krishna's names and follow this simple formula. That is the simple. So Prabhupada said it is actually very simple. You don't have to, there's no artificial impositions on the mind. Just accept that we're Krishna's servant and we have to expand our love to that point. We won't be satisfied minimizing. The soul has expansive love if it is contracted into just attempting to love that of the material world, then we are no better actually than animals. And as soon as we accept that we are Krishna's servant and love him, then everything will come about. And if we can once, by the great fortune of whatever it takes, and sometimes the material nature will put us in that great fortune, like Draupadi, if we can just one time call out to Krishna with a full heart, "Hey, Govinda." And that is the great mercy of the material world in Kali Yuga. It continuously puts pressure and miseries and enforces so much misery. Jiva Goswami explains this. There's one of his comments in the 11th canto. He asks the question, why is it that in other ages, was it that the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra didn't have potency? Did Krishna's name, was Krishna not different from his name then? No, he answers, yes. That Krishna always is his name. The Hare Krishna Mantra always has potency. But in Kali Yuga it is special, because there is so much anxiety in Kali Yuga that one will hold on, one can hold on very tightly and simply to this one simple thing. Kali Yuga, we can count on it. Count on it. We'll be crushing and crushing and crushing. Heavy diseases, heavy anxiety, this, that. Financial problems. Prabhupada explains, simple village life, no anxiety. Food problems solved. Cows, land. But no, Kali Yuga, no, anxiety. So we should take shelter of Krishna's names. And when we're in anxiety, we should especially do that, understanding that's Krishna's special mercy upon us. But yet, the Kali Yuga hearts, it is difficult to love. What I would like to do now is read something that speaks of the love. What is love as exhibited in Vrindavan, not by the gopis of Vrindavan, but this is more on Mother Yashoda's love. We were hearing in that 15th chapter of the Bhagavatam about Krishna going to the forest. So when Krishna's going to the forest, the Vrindavan forest, the trees, the animals, everyone is ecstatic. But the residents of Vrindavan, because they love Krishna so much, they're in complete anxiety because Krishna is leaving them and going to the forest. Oh, we could say he's only going for a few hours. Why are they in anxiety? But that few hours appears so long when this love is so intense, as the residents of Vrindavan were experiencing their relationship with Krishna. Listen to Mother Yashoda speaks to, this is written by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. She tells Krishna just as he's going to the forest, "O tender boy, if you go into the forest to tend your cows, then we will all follow you. Don't deceive us by going without us. O son, don't send us elsewhere. Take us with you. We know you cannot tolerate the heartache of your parents who are burning in the fire of separation from you. O ornament of our town, if you don't take us with you, then these blissful abodes in our town will swallow us by force, and we will remain alive in vain. Do you want to hurt us by returning home from the forest only after 9 long hours? If you don't want to come home soon, then what shall we do? Where are the soles of your feet that are like the spotless and tender leaves of crimson lotuses?" What color is crimson? Red, like a darkish red, the bottom of Krishna's feet. "What will happen to them? And where are the sharp sprouts, thorns and pebbles in the forest soil? You're going to be walking. This is their concern. You're going to be walking with your lotus feet that are tender like that? Oh, where is your body that it is as soft as butter sprinkled with liquid musk? And where are the scorching rays of the sun that increase their heat at every moment? So what is she thinking? Who is she worrying about continuously? She's worrying about Krishna. The life of this unfortunate mother of yours that is tearing up her chest refuses to leave her. She's thinking, you're going to go away for 9 hours and I'm going to stay alive worrying about you? It bears the burden of a kingdom of great cruelty. Let the coward boys, or King Nanda himself, herd the cows. Oh, my child, if you don't give up your eagerness for this, then how can your friends remain alive? Oh, my tender Krishna, why did you take your birth in a family of cowherds where you must walk after the grazing cows? With a body such as yours, which is softened by the nectar of auspiciousness, you should have been born in a royal family where there are no menial duties like going out to serve the cows. Hearing this ocean of faltering words from his mother, Krishna humbly waited before going into the forest and stood before her. Why is Krishna doing this? In one sentence, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will explain it. But not quite yet. Mother Yashoda, whose life was almost gone, just imagine, she's describing what it's like. She was about to leave her body practically. She became aware of this, that Krishna was staying there until she had finished, and she embraced Krishna, showering him with the tears of her love. Mother Yashoda recovered from her swoon because of Krishna's blissful embrace as Krishna forced her to drink the nectar of parental love. All Krishna's dealings can be understood, no matter what, just like the residents of Vrindavan, no matter what they're doing, they only have one center and one activity, just to please Krishna. And Krishna, that Supreme Lord, universes coming from his skin holes, the great creator, the great lawgiver, the one who has his desire is reality. Whatever he desires happens. And what is he doing when confronted with the love of these devotees? He's simply understanding and planning and acting to increase their ecstasy. Their ecstasy happiness is caused by love. This is what Prabhupada was explaining. And Krishna is the natural object of love, the only object of love. So Mother Yashoda, Krishna, by his going to the forest and doing this and that, whatever he was doing, it was to churn the nectar of Mother Yashoda's parental love. She then became overwhelmed with feelings of love as she protected her son's body with the names of Lord Nisringadev, telling Balabhadra, Subhadra, Vardhana, and other leading boys that stood before her, "Oh boys, my Krishna is still your younger brother, your friend, and your very life. Don't I know that? Still, this mother cannot remain alive without being ground into pulp every day. Although Hari is so tender, he is the leader of all you rowdy boys. And although he is very intelligent, he does not know his limits. Although he is weak, he is also very dashing." She's thinking of him just as her little boy, and she sees these qualities in him, but in her mind, she is a mother always. "Therefore, You should stay around him to protect him. And this is another explanation of why we heard yesterday how the cowherd boys were just surrounding Krishna. This was Mother Yasoda's request to them, a request that they took very seriously, because also they wanted to always be near Krishna. They surrounded him to protect him. He cannot be controlled by his father, his mother, or any of his superiors, but he may listen to you. I hope my request to you will not be in vain. If you see cruel demonic servants, Kamsa's cruel demonic servants, because Kamsa was always sending one demon after another to kill all the young children, to kill Krishna. If you see any of these demons coming, run. But where the cowherd boys, our prime business is to take care of the cows. But run, leaving even the cows, and quickly take shelter of us. Oh, Krishna, are there no games in this world for men? Oh, Raktak, Patrak, and the other expert servant boys, I'll tell you about Krishna and Balaram's nature. Listen, even if they're hungry, they are not aware of it. This is Mother. I had an experience where I really understood a mother's love. It's very personal, but I'll tell it anyway. Just a few days before my mother left this world, I was in Australia in Mwillimbaa, and I telephoned her, and she was very, very, very ill. And although I couldn't travel at that time, my passport was caught somewhere. But I said to her, should I come? I'll come. And there she was. She was lying down in the hospital. And she said to me, if you come, where will you eat? How will you eat? Because this is a mother. Very, very pure, Prabhupada said. The motherly love is the purest love in this world, he said. So Mother Yasoda was talking like this. So their nature is, even if they're hungry, they're not aware of it because they're so absorbed in playing. And even if their throats are dried up from thirst, they will not feel thirsty. Then Yasoda told her husband Nanda, the roads where our boys walk will be scorched by the sun. And this mother even stays alive seeing this father staying home in his golden brick home. You're letting your boy go out in this scorching sun and you're staying home in your golden palace. Even those women whose sons suffer when they go out to tend the cows, but who shamelessly continue their household duties without dying of compassion. Who can do their duties? Such people like that, they are worshipped in this world. Then she told Krishna, your friends who see you going into the forest have become as hard as thunderbolts, but still you gladden them with your attributes, having a heart as soft as a flower. Krishna, who wore these words of his afflicted mother like earrings on his ears, they were decorating his ears because this was just her love. He was pulling the love from her heart and pulling the ecstatic feelings she was feeling. Revived her by sprinkling her with the nectar from his moon-like smile. How is Krishna going to reply to this? He says, Mother, you have not seen the forest path. I feel no trouble in tending the cows at all. It's my greatest pleasure, because she's interested in his pleasure. We're playing in the dense, cool shade of the fragrant trees in the forest on the bank of the Yamuna. We just look at the cows. It is not a problem for us to keep the cows together. For that, I have my expert new Murli flute. Because the cows, he controls the cows and keeps them together with his flute, he says, with his flute playing. And the paths also don't give me any pain. The chamari deer sweep them with their tails. You are asking what is going on in Vrindavan with the shrubbery. This gives us a hint. The chamari deer are sweeping him with their tails. The trees shower the paths with their honey. And the nabi deer scent them with their musk. And this is what's going on in Vrindavan, because every creature, the dust, everything, the trees, the deer, everything is simply interested in pleasing Krishna, Mother Yasoda, the cowherd boys. These paths are flawless and as soft as cotton, fluffed cotton. With its fragrant caves and kunjas where the cuckoos sing, the peacocks dance, the honeybees buzz, and where the vines with their different flowers are always swung by a soft breeze, and where there are many cascading waterfalls, Govardhan Hill attracts our mind at every step. The joy of your jeweled abodes, meaning Nandagram, give me nothing compared to the joy I feel in those mountain caves. There, I'm adorned with flowers, and there I lie down in great joy. So why are you so distressed? Saying this, and then Maru Mangal was there, and he said, "Oh, mother, why are you so upset? Listen, I will tell you frankly. There's not a drop of happiness in your town compared to the bliss we feel in the forest. We simply eat the ripe and fragrant bananas, jackfruits, mangoes, and pomegranates that fall automatically from the trees, because Maru Mangal Batu is always famous for his love of eating, the Brahmin boy. Our friend Krishna desires to go to the forest to pick the fruits, leaves, and flowers from the desire vines. Such a desire cannot be fulfilled in your town. Although they are very hungry, the cows will not set one foot in the forest without Krishna, the destroyer of his friend's miseries. By now, they begin to call him by mooing. Can you hear them?" So Achyuta, seeing their condition, carefully stopped his parents from following him and blissfully began to mark the forest soil with the signs of the disc, the lotus, etc., from the soles of his feet as he walked on. While he went to the forest, Hari thought, "Those who love me feel sad when I leave, so let me take their minds with me." But the Brajbasi's eyes also thought, their eyes, and this we hear later, how the eyes become independent entities, and they become envious of the ears. They can't see Krishna yet, so they become envious of the ears who are hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, and the nose who are smelling the fragrance of Krishna. So the eyes, they become very strong and act independently, and go, and they, the gopis' eyes, they force to look at Krishna, even though all shyness dictates that they don't look directly at Krishna. So of course Krishna looks in the other direction and Balaram stays in the background so that the gopis can look at Krishna. But the Brijbasi's eyes also thought, "What other objects?" So their minds were already taken by Krishna, but their eyes thought, "What other objects do we have but Krishna?" So they followed him. So the eyes of everyone in Vrindavan just simply followed Krishna as he went to the forest. In this way, the Brijbasis entered their homes like liberated souls that maintain their bodies only as an external custom, while Krishna was in the forest. No, from Krishna Bhavanamriti, Rita. So, why don't we take a 10-minute break right now? It's 11. Or why don't we begin again at 15 minutes after 11? And if anyone's a little tired, take a little rest. If anyone's whatever, and then we'll come back and hear about Krishna's cow herding with the boys in the forest. And if required, has very kindly sent, he's kindly come himself, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, to teach us, to call us, to tell us to chant, to inspire us to wake up and to understand clearly that nothing in the dream of material, of the material world, can actually satisfy us. We need to hear this again and again and again, because Maya is very strong. Underestimate the power of the illusory energy. It is very strong. Mama Maya Dratya. Why is it so strong? How did it get so strong? Is it like a rebellious devil who is captivating everyone against the desire of the Supreme Lord? And the answer is, of course, no. Because Daivyesha Gunamayi, this Gunamayi, this material nature, is so strong because it's empowered by Krishna to only allow those in the spiritual world to awaken who actually fully wish to awaken. And as soon as one actually wishes to awaken, there is no question of Maya's influence. Maya, abhimukhe balajamana, Maya cannot stand before Krishna. Like light, darkness cannot stand before light. So if we are always in the light of Krishna, Krishna consciousness, if we can somehow or another keep ourselves in the light of Krishna consciousness, that's all it takes. Krishna consciousness means here is Krishna, here is this tiny individual soul, and I am Krishna's servant. Krishna, 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 how can I serve you? O Lord, O energy of the Lord, O Srimati Radharani, how can I serve you? That's all it takes. The light, if the light is always on, there is no question of darkness. So on one side, we have to become convinced, fully, deeply convinced, that no amount of illusory, dreamlike paraphernalia, objects, can make me happy, me, the soul. I cannot be happy on that level. And on the other side, I need to develop my attraction, my love for Krishna. To put us in the right mood, what I would like everyone to do, I'll tell you what we will do before that, before everyone just closes their eyes and thinks of Krishna. We'll do that for just a moment or two, and then we'll hear the first three verses and perhaps the fourth verse. We've already read three verses in this 15th chapter, so Prashanta Mataji will sing the Sanskrit and I'll read the English. And just while this is happening, just have your mind gently enter the scene that has been described already to Sukadev Goswami. Remember, Sukadev is speaking to Maharaj Prickett, who is about to leave this world. And he wants Maharaj Prickett's consciousness to be, and Maharaj Prickett wants his own consciousness to be fully focused on Krishna. So this is what he's saying. So first, and then I may say a few other things as we're thinking about Krishna. But right now, everyone, just close your eyes. You can play. Close your eyes, please, and take your favorite form of Krishna with paraphernalia and place a nice garland upon him. So invite Krishna in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Prabhupada describes the cleansing of the Gaudiya temple, he speaks about the heart has to be cleansed, and then invite Krishna to reside in one's heart and hold a big festival in honor of this. keep Krishna there focused, beautiful Krishna. Make some offerings at his lotus feet. Offer some prayers. Reveal your heart to him, your aspirations, your desires. When Lord Rama and Lord Krishna attained the age of Poganda, 6 to 10, while living in Vrindavan, the cowherd men allowed them to take up the task of tending the cows. Engaging thus in the company of their friends, the two boys rendered the land of Vrindavan most auspicious by imprinting upon it the marks of their lotus feet. Thus desiring to enjoy pastimes, Lord Madhava, sounding his flute, surrounded by cowherd boys who were chanting his glories, and accompanied by Lord Baladev, kept the cows before him and entered the Vrindavan forest, which was full of flowers and rich with nourishment for the animals. The Supreme Personality of Godhead looked over that forest, which resounded with the charming sound of bees, animals, and birds, and which was enhanced by a lake whose clear water resembled the mind of great souls, and by a breeze carrying the fragrance of 100-petaled lotuses. Seeing all this, Lord Krishna decided to enjoy the auspicious atmosphere. The primeval Lord saw that the stately trees, with their beautiful reddish buds and their heavy burden of fruits and flowers, were bending down to touch his feet with the tips of their branches. Thus, he smiled gently and addressed his elder brother. Now we'll read. Mataji just read the Sanskrit of the fourth verse, the verse we'll start with right now. So if you could take out that the 15th chapter sheets that you have, and please repeat after me. Sa tatra tatra aruna palavastriya. So this verse, this what Krishna sees all around, tatra tatra, he, sa, he, tatra tatra, all around, it's going to refer to a word in the third line, the vanaspatin, which means trees or lordly trees. So tatra tatra, all around, he saw these vanaspatin, these lordly trees, and what were they doing? How did he see them? Palavas Aruna. Aruna means reddish. Aruna is the chariot driver of Ravi. So when the sun comes up in the morning, it has a reddish hue first, and that very beautiful and effulgent reddish color is called Aruna. It is not a deep royal red, but it is that very effulgent pinkish red that is very, very, very attractive and beautiful. So all around, Aruna Palava Sriya. This Palava means the buds, the reddish Aruna red buds of the trees that were very, very beautiful, that were covered with, in the next line, let's read that. I'll read it first. Phala prasunaru barena padayo. Everyone. Barena padayo. So these, the branches of these trees, which had reddish buds and were very beautiful, also had phal, fruit, and prasuna, which is beautiful flowers. So this is what it is like in Vrindavan. As we heard in the previous verse, verses kusumakaram, it was full of flowers, all for the pleasure of Krishna. So this, the trees, their branches, were filled with reddish buds and beautiful flowers and luscious, tasty fruits and padayo. They were bending urubarena. They were very, very heavy with these fruits and flowers, and therefore they were bending down to touch the lotus feet of Krishna. And the next line, spri sach chikan, they were touching with their the tips of their branches the lotus feet of Krishna. Viksha. We'll read the next line. Spri sach chikan viksha vinaspatin muda. Everyone. So these branches that were overladen with their heavy burden of fruits and flowers and their beautiful buds, reddish buds, were touching Krishna's lotus feet. And viksha, what does viksha mean? Viksha. So Krishna saw this, and he understood the mood of the trees, the lordly trees. He understood their mood, how they were bending low, offering, making offerings, and touching his lotus feet. And how did he respond? Mudha. Mudha means he became very, very joyful, practically speaking, intoxicated with joy. Why? He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Does he need branches touching his feet to make him feel joyful? He owns everything, creation. He creates everything. But these trees being residents of Vrindavan, and this point is very wonderful to remember. Keep it in your mind because it will be relevant, especially in the next verse. These trees were making their offering to Krishna. And this is what they had. What can trees offer? They can offer their very tender reddish buds. They can offer their fruits, their flowers. They cannot sing other than the possibly creak a little bit. But this was their offering. And to make this offering was the ecstasy of their existence, the completion of their existence. So Krishna saw this, viksha, he saw this, and muda. He became very joyful. One of the acharyas say, comment that Krishna became not only joyful but intoxicated with joy upon seeing this, the incredible Vrindavan forest, which was simply desiring to give him pleasure. So he became intoxicated with joy, and in that joy, that intoxication, he had to say something. He had to speak. And therefore, in the next verses, Krishna is going to speak. So what does he do? We'll read the last line. Smayani vaha grajam mari purusham. So Smayan, in his joy, Krishna began to laugh. And what did he do? He spoke, aha, Eva, agrajam. Agra means the number one or the top, and jam, it refers to his elder brother, Balaram. So he's going to speak to Balaram, his elder brother. And some of the acharyas say that he's going to address his elder brother, Adi Purusha, here. And here in this translation, because other acharyas say that Adi Purusha is the one who is speaking. The Supreme Lord is speaking, and he is Adi Purusha. So who is actually Adi Purusha? If Krishna is Adi Purusha, how could he have an agrajam, an elder brother? Because if he's the original, by definition, no one can be elder to him. But for the purpose of the pastime, and his Naralila, his pastimes in this world, he's addressing his brother. Later on, he will definitely call his brother Adi Purusha. Now, here is the translation. The primeval Lord, so here again, primeval Lord is Adi Purusha. He saw that the stately trees, that is the vanaspatin, with their beautiful reddish buds and their heavy burden of fruits and flowers, were bending down to touch his feet with the tips of their branches. Thus, he smiled gently and addressed his elder brother. Here is the short purport, and then we'll read a comment of the Acharyas. We'll read Srila Sanatana Goswami's comment and part of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. He is very pleased with their reception of him. First, the purport here. The word muda smayani va indicates, does anyone remember what muda means without looking? Very joyful, intoxicatedly joyful, so extremely joyful. So the word muda smayani va indicates that Lord Krishna was in a joking mood. He knew that the trees were actually bowing down to worship him. They were touching his feet. He knew their purpose. As the Supreme Lord, he knew their mind. But in the following verses, the Lord, speaking in a friendly, lighthearted mood, gives the credit to his brother Balaram, his elder brother Balaram. Here is what Srila Sanatana Goswami says about this. The implication he takes Adi Purusha to not refer to Krishna, but to refer to Balaram. The implication of the words Adi Purusha, the primeval Supreme Lord, is that even though Balaram is not actually the firstborn, what is the word for firstborn or the elder brother here? Agrajam. He's not actually, by definition. It is befitting for the Lord to address him as such because he has been manifest as the firstborn for the particular purpose of these playful pastimes. The fact is that Krishna, being satisfied with the unique offering of obeisances by the trees, he is desiring to reciprocate with them. He wants to give them something. He wants to please them. He thus humbly directs them towards his own service. He's encouraging them to continue to serve them, and that he's accepting that service. He's appreciating that service. But he has to do it indirectly, because if he says, "You are doing a wonderful job of serving me," that's very vain. That's inappropriate to say, "Oh, you are doing so wonderfully, you are serving me." Not appropriate to speak like that. So he's going to praise their service indirectly by praising, even though he knows that it's directed towards offering obeisances and offering fruits and flowers to him, he knows their heart. He's going to describe it in such a way in his words that these offerings are meant for Lord Balaram. So by describing these trees to Balaram, he first of all, on the occasion of his entrance into the forest of Vrindavan, shows special mercy to all those present by describing the various good qualities of those trees. So he's going to glorify the trees and their service to him. Then Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, describing the superiority of the trees, with the beauty of their reddish buds turned downward, touching his 2 feet, which are also very, very reddish, implies, by his glorifying the trees and their doing this, he implies his own super excellence. But since it is not proper for him to himself to state that super excellence, he's going to do it indirectly. But due to his lack of gravity, because of his feelings of ecstasy expressed by the word muda, he is unable to remain without speaking. Just see the devotion of these trees, the devotion of the Vrindavan forest, the love of Vrindavan has destabilized the Supreme Personality of Godhead's gravity. Gravity means depth. Gravity in consciousness. You didn't describe the meaning of that in the 64 qualities of Krishna. What does gravity do? It means that and one, especially, one cannot know what another is thinking, very reserved in mind, and one cannot know what that person is thinking. If you cannot understand the mind of another, that person is known as very grave. So Krishna, as one of his 64 qualities, possesses such depth and gravity that no one can understand his mind. And the example given, if I remember correctly, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, is that when Brahma offered his prayers, Krishna remained silent. And Brahma could not even understand whether Krishna was pleased or not. He couldn't penetrate the depth of his mind. But here, in Vrindavan, as Krishna walked into the forest of Vrindavan, his reception, and we'll hear more about what it was like in the forest of Vrindavan, was such a loving offering that Krishna's gravity was lessened. And in his intoxication of his happiness, that word muda again, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura explains, he could not stop from speaking. The love of Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan, pulled, that broke his gravity, and pulled out of their affection. It pulled the affection from Krishna and intoxicated him. And remember, as we spoke yesterday, who is this Krishna? This Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that which the entirety of the material world is resting upon. He is creating the pradhan. The mahatattva comes from him. Everything is coming from him. Time, which crushes everything within the material world, is coming from him. So powerful. But the love of the trees, of the bees, of the birds, of the cows, the reception that he gets, the affection, soaking, that affection that is soaking their offerings, destroys Krishna's gravity, intoxicates him, so he has to speak. He has to reciprocate with him, with the residents of Vrindavan, through his words. So, this word muda means he is unable to remain. This is the effect of love on Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is known as Bhakta Vatsala. So intense is the love of Krishna, of the residents in Vrindavan. It melts Krishna in this way. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, thus, he cannot remain without speaking. Thus the Lord addresses Balaram as Adi Purusha. He follows Sanatana Goswami by saying the Adi Purusha, the primeval Lord, refers to Lord Balaram. And this will come clear that Lord Balaram, he's going to call him actually Adi Purusha. He calls Balaram Adi Purusha, which is actually his own name. By the word Eva is implied that the Lord is concealing his own laughter. Which word is, where is the Eva? Eva, Smayan, Eva Agraha, Agrajam, Adi Purusham. The Lord is concealing his own laughter, thinking, may my elder brother not understand that this glorification is actually addressed to myself. He's smiling, but not letting it out, a big laugh. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami has explained, he has made this point clearly why he's going to speak indirectly. Sanatana Goswami says, Lord Hari was ready to engage in glorifying Vrindavan and its inhabitants because of their great love for him. Why? Because he was agitated. His consciousness was agitated by their sweetness, the sweetness of their love. But then he took note that that would be tantamount, would be basically declaring his own super excellence, and therefore he presented this glorification with reference to Balaram. Let us go on now to the fifth verse. Okay? Do you think you'd be able to sing that one? And these, this fifth, sixth, seventh, and I believe the eighth verse, yes, up to the eighth verse, are Krishna's own words glorifying, indirectly glorifying himself, but speaking as if glorifying Balaram and glorifying the offerings made by these various residents of Vrindavan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O greatest of lords, just see how these trees are bowing their heads at your lotus feet, which are worshipable by the immortal demigods. The trees are offering you their fruits and flowers to eradicate the dark ignorance that has caused their birth as trees. Let's go over the word by words. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, everyone knows what that means. Aho, the first word. Very, very emphatic, enthusiastic in his words right now. Krishna is speaking. Aho, ami, these, and that's referring to the trees. Ami means these. Deva Vara. Oh, best of lords. Sri Balaram, which means the Deva, the best of the demigods. Those who you are that one who is worshipped by the best of the demigods. Deva Vara Amara. The best of the demigods, of these immortal demigods, Architam, they are worshipping you. And these trees are worshipping your lotus feet in the same way that the best of the demigods worship your lotus feet. That's Aho Ami Deva Varam Architam. Arachitam. Padambujam. They are worshipping your lotus feet because the demigods are so powerful, they are so learned. And who is the best of the demigods? There's plural there, but Lord Brahma is the best of the demigods. And everyone is worshipping your lotus feet, Lord Balaram. And that's true. But actually, everyone ultimately worships the lotus feet of the younger brother of Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna. And how are these worshipping him? This is Krishna speaking, the lotus feet of Balaram, with Sumana, Phala, Arhanam. They are worshipping, Arhanam, they are worshipping you, your lotus feet, with their flowers and their phal, their fruits. Then the third verse, I'll read it and everyone, the third line of the verse, I'll read it and everyone repeat after me. Namanti upadaya sikha biratmanas. Namanti, they're worshipping your lotus feet by bowing down. Upadaya, they're presenting. Sikhabi, with their heads. They're bowing down to your lotus feet and making these presentations. And then the last line. Tamo pahatyai taro janmayat kritam. Why are they doing this? Tama, the darkness of ignorance. And of course, there are such important instructions for us in this. Because what stops us from worshipping Krishna, from remaining in the dream of illusion, for remaining in the dream of illusion that makes us think continuously that we are the center of existence? What stops us from loving Krishna? It is ignorance, simply ignorance. tama. Ignorance of who we are, who Krishna is, ignorance of our relationship with Krishna, ignorance of the process of devotional service. This Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes as tattva vibhrama. These ignorances are anartis. They cover our heart and stop us from worshipping Krishna. So to remove the ignorance of the tree's birth, what are they doing? They are bowing down and worshipping Krishna, making offerings to his lotus feet. Balaram Krishna. What is their ignorance that has caused them, taru janma, to take this, we'll use the term that's not appropriate for these particular trees really, to take this rotten birth, which is full of so many material desires, so many inappropriate thoughts that get in the way of our actual surrender to Krishna, our actual evoking our love of Krishna. It is simply deep, deep, darkest ignorance. So the trees, Krishna says, are bowing down and making their offerings to remove the ignorance caused by their birth as trees. Let's read the translation one more time, and then we'll hear the purport, and then the comments of the acharyas. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O greatest of lords, just see how these trees are bowing their heads at your lotus feet, which are worshipable by the immortal demigods. The trees are offering you their fruits and flowers to eradicate the dark ignorance that has caused their birth as trees. Purport. The trees of Vrindavan were thinking that because of past offenses they had now taken birth of trees, and being immovable could not accompany Lord Krishna and his wanderings throughout the Vrindavan area. How unfortunate we are, they were thinking. Krishna has come with his cows, the boys. We're able to offer something, but then Krishna will move on. Our opportunity to offer something to Krishna will end. So they were feeling terrible that their birth of trees as trees made them so limited. They could not walk. They could not accompany Krishna. They could not continue making their offerings to Krishna. So they're thinking, this is due to some offense that we've committed, that we cannot go with Krishna and continue serving him. But of course, these trees were not at all ignorant. Of course, they were even more exalted than the most exalted of the demigods. There is a prayer that Brahma offered just in the previous chapter when he understood who Krishna was clearly, and he understood who the cowherd boys were, that they were the most exalted persons because Krishna was the Supreme Lord with an unlimited potency. And they, the cowherd boys, and all the residents of Vrindavan were therefore the most exalted of persons because they had such intimate association with Krishna, that such intimate opportunities to serve him. And here he was thinking, oh, I'm the controller, I'm the greatest of the demigods. And what was his prayer? This is in the 14th chapter, the 34th text. Lord Brahma said, my greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth wherever in the forest of Gokul and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. They had made, and this is the specific quality of the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna is everything for them. They know nothing other than Krishna. This position is the most exalted of positions. We'll read the purport to that verse. This verse indicates that Lord Brahma, who again is the best of the demigods, he desires to take birth even as the smallest blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that the holy residents of the Lord's abode may walk upon his head and bless him with the dust of their feet. Being realistic, Lord Brahma does not aspire to directly achieve the dust of Lord Krishna's feet. Rather, he aspires for the mercy of the Lord's devotees. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Brahma is willing to take birth even as a stone in a paved footpath in the Lord's abode. Since Brahma is the creator of the entire universe, we can just imagine the glorious position of the residents of Vrindavan, even the trees. The purport continues. The Lord's devotees achieve their exalted position by unalloyed devotion and love. One cannot achieve such spiritual opulence by any puffed-up material process of personal improvement. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada reveals the mind of Brahma as follows. But if I am not so fortunate as to take birth within the forest of Vrindavan, I beg to be allowed to take birth outside the immediate area of Vrindavan, so that when the devotees go out, they will walk over me. Even that would be a great fortune for me. I'm just aspiring for a birth in which I will be smeared by the dust of the devotees' feet. So this is the mood and the words of the most exalted of the demigods. So how exalted is Vrindavan? How exalted is Vrindavan? How exalted are the residents of Vrindavan? And again, the price is very simple. Tatraloyam apimulam ekalam. There is one price, a complete desire and eagerness to achieve this intimate service of Krishna. And again, on one side there is attraction to Krishna, on the other side, what is it in the material world that we desire that is worth it, that it makes it worth it? And the answer, if we look at, we can try our best to enjoy the material world and see what gives us pleasure, we can try. If we want to, go ahead. Or we can pick up any newspaper and read about the fate and the happinesses of those who possess everything that we desire. We will see if they die, or if they are happy, or if they are not working through their sixth wife and remarrying their seventh wife, their fourth wife when for their sixth wife or something like that. Or we can be extremely intelligent despite our the difficulties of our birth and our conditioning, but just very humbly bow down like the trees of Vrindavan and attempt to touch the lotus feet of Krishna and get that dust or the dust of the devotees. And this is what Lord Brahma is aspiring for, even. Such a birth that will allow him to get in touch with the dust of Vrindavan. Radhe, Radhe. It's just so natural, even though sometimes we can see the fortune of these people. They're always in touch with the dust of Vrindavan. Sometimes we can say, oh, they're not real Brijbasis. The real Brijbasis are not materialistic in the slightest of ways, but yet these personages are always in touch with the dust of Vrindavan. They're carrying the branches of the trees. And look at these trees. Look what they're clinging to. We think, look at them, they're clinging so tightly to Govardhan Hill. You can cut them, and that's what happens all the time to feed the animals. They're cutting them and cutting them and cutting them, but they're just clinging. Their roots get just simply deeper and deeper and deeper. The more you cut them, the deeper their roots go. And if we become like that, we get cut. That's what it means to be in the material world. You get cut by this, you get cut by that. But let every cut Just send our roots deeper and deeper to find the real nourishment that the soul is longing for. And what is that nourishment? That nourishment is that association with Krishna that comes through associating with Krishna, through the hearing, the chanting process, through the basically Panchanga Bhakti. So the Acharyas, let's see if there are any comments on this one. Get back to the fifth verse. The fortunate of the trees. Krishna himself is glorifying the trees of Vrindavan, who are associating with him, making their offerings to him. Yes. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Sanatana Goswami have comments. Srila Sanatana Goswami says, what is the first word in this verse? Aho. Yes. The word aho is spoken in joy or in surprise or as respect to Balaram. They are offering their flowers and fruits to you. These are the paraphernalia of their worship. Because worship means something offered with love. There is something that is being given, a fruit or a flower. Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Doyam. Does Krishna need fruits or flowers? No, but bhakti. There is some bhakti in the heart of the devotee. There is love and devotion there. And this, the offering, is the external manifestation of the devotion. The external manifestation of something internal. And I notice, from living in Vrindavan for quite a long time, I noticed something that I thought was interesting. There was a time period where I used to walk around Vrindavan every day. Each day I'd walk around in Vrindavan. And then I saw that after seeing you, because the people, they see people, the residents, the people who live here on the other side of Vrindavan, they see people walking around every day. So if they see someone walking around, even a Videshi, a foreigner, they're not impressed, they don't care. But if they see you every day, day after day, week after week, even month after month doing something, what to speak of year after year, then they actually notice, there is some devotion there. Because it's easy to, out of a sentiment, to do something once, I can make an offering. But to do something day after day, to perform a service, any service, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, this is very difficult. The material energy will test you again and again. The mind will be attacked by so many reasons why one should not continue. And therefore, in Kali Yuga, from my experiences, we don't perform the austerities that previous sages and saints and devotees used to perform. They would go without, they would live so simply. As an austerity to get their mind off of the material platform. But in Kali Yuga, we can't live in that way. But the austerity is just to continue. That is such a mental austerity, just to continue in one service, day after day, week after week, month after month, year, no matter what the mind is telling you. Especially in preaching. Because if one actually preaches, if one goes in the Western world and preaches, everyone should give up meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. It's not that the world is going to stand up and cheer. What a great idea. We never had thought of it before. Thank you for letting us know that we should give up meat eating, intoxication, sex, and gambling. No. The world is going to try and kill you. They will try literally kill you. Because this is how the people get their pleasure. This is how people are making their money. The cigarette manufacturers, the liquor manufacturers, the people who run the all the other illicit industries. Literally, they will kill you. The drug people, there is so much money in these things. Oh, to speak, as you were saying yesterday, one doesn't feel right speaking about these things in front of Govardhan, actually. But this is a fact, so it's such an austerity to preach in Kali Yuga. And the people are so wounded in Kali Yuga that if one can do this, Krishna sees, he takes special appreciation out of this. Paramam guyam madbhakteshu vidasyati. Krishna, and therefore there's one little story I'd like to relate, that there was the devotee, there was a Babaji who gave to ISKCON the land of that Brindakund is on. And he had been in Vrindavan, living in Vrindavan as a Babaji for many, 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 many years. And when it was time for him to leave this world, he needed some care, and he had seen ISKCON, and he had seen all of Vrindavan and what was going on. He decided he wanted to give his Brindakund, which he was so devoted to ISKCON. That was his decision. And one of the, I don't remember if it was Jagtrini who told me this, or one other devotee, Murlidhar, who was taking care of him, he said that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was right. This was his conclusion. That in Kali Yuga, to be a Babaji, he had seen everything, is so, so, so difficult. Who succeeds to... And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said actually to take Babaji before the platform, before one is on bhava, is illicit, inappropriate. Because one is just supposed to be devoted to simply chanting Krishna's names. So his conclusion was, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, this Madhava Baba's conclusion was, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was right. That to live alone, just try to only live alone and try to act as the great sadhus, exalted Gaudiya Vaishnavas of the past did, Kali Yuga has progressed to a degree that it is impossible. So therefore, by preaching, one gets the special mercy of Krishna that allows one to actually get a taste, to actually enter into the correct kind of chanting. Otherwise, very, 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 very difficult. One needs a special gift from Krishna, some special mercy to be able to do this. So therefore, Prabhupada pushed and insisted. He wanted the Krishna consciousness movement to spread all over the world. And we'll discuss this this point. I have a tape where Prabhupada talks about the preaching spirit, and we'll play that again from Seattle. But this evokes Krishna's mercy so we can attain this most cherished thing that even the greatest of the demigods, that Lord Brahma is so pious that sometimes there's no soul. Just understand how pious Lord Brahma is. That there is sometimes there is no soul who is pious and pure enough to take the position of Lord Brahma, and therefore Lord Vishnu himself has to come and perform the function of Lord Brahma. And look what he is praying for. Let me take birth in a way that I can attain. I can't even attain directly the dust of Lord Krishna's feet. So let me at least let the devotees, when they walk out of Vrindavan. So therefore, and here is one extremely, extremely arrogant and fallen soul. He wants this, perhaps, or at least, you know, to the tiniest degree. But unless there is some special infusion of mercy, what hope is there? So how exalted is what we are hearing? But unless the desire is planted in the heart, unless we use the word I noted shamelessly sometimes, we desire something, like an ant desiring to climb Mount Everest, perhaps. But unless the desire is there, some seed of desire. This is what Prabhupada came to give. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. This is the gift of the Sampradaya. Itam satam brahmasukhana bhutya. Kritta punya punya. How much punya these coward boys that we're going to hear about have attained to be able to play with Krishna as if they were the most intimate friends. So, oho, Sanatana Goswami says, is spoken in joy or in surprise or as respect to Balaram. They are offering their fruits and flowers to you. These are the paraphernalia of their worship. Sumana, flowers, hints that this is based on transcendental ecstasy. This is what has made Krishna so joyful, the ecstasy of their offering, the full-heartedness of their offering, their love, their affection for him. O brother, you are worshipped by the immortals, Krishna says, such as Brahma and others, by their bringing upon their heads that which is found in this world and suitable for presentation to you in devotional service. So that hints also that whatever we have that is suitable to offer to Krishna in devotional service, whatever it is, let us offer it. But let us let it be a gesture of a sincere attempt of offering. Prabhupada once was asked, I think it was by Satsut Raj, he was in the very early days in 1966, about this philosopher and that philosopher. They were asking Prabhupada, how Krishna conscious is this one? How Krishna conscious is Kierkegaard? How Krishna conscious is this one? And Prabhupada said, their sincerity is their Krishna consciousness. So I keep coming back to this in my own life, that whatever little minuscule sincerity that I actually have that has been awakened in me by mercy, that is what I, let me offer things with that. Let me coat whatever I do with that. Whatever, even though it may be so small, this is the sincerity. But please, I want to offer this to you. And if we can just, this is the demigods. Everything the demigods are offering is insignificant compared to Krishna. What to speak of us? So let us, a little bit of sincerity, let me please you. And much of Sanatana Goswami's commentary is included in the purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. This is the mood of the trees. So as Krishna, as the most greatest linguist, understands the language of the trees, even the great devotees like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur can pierce exactly how they are thinking, their mood, because they are not dull trees, actually. These are exalted personages. This is the mood of the trees. We present worship at the lotus feet of our master, Sri Krishna, with our own fruits, flowers, and so on. Krishna knows this, thus making known with a side-long glance his own perfect knowledge. So Krishna knows this. So he's speaking like this, and with his side-long glance he looks at the trees so that they know that he knows what their mood actually is. Making known with a side-long glance his own perfect knowledge to his exalted devotees, the trees of Sri Vrindavan, with the thought, I know what you are saying within your minds. Lord Krishna thus speaks to his elder brother in the verse beginning, Aho. He knows their devotion to him. They are making their offerings of their fruits and flowers to his feet for the elimination of their own darkness, their offenses by which they have achieved their birth as trees, in which they feel they are incapable of moving into the proximity of Krishna. This is their lamentation. So perhaps a little lamentation can come to my heart that due to the particular rottenness of my heart and the extreme selfishness of my heart and so many offenses that I cannot move into the proximity of Krishna. So some lamentation has to be there. This is what was described after Ajamil attained the fortune of being saved by whom? The Vishnudutas. From whom? The Yamadutas. And when he awoke from that traumatic experience, what was the first thing he do? What he did first? Actually, he went to Haridwar and took shelter in a temple. But before he did that, what did he do? He what? Yeah, what did he do? What were his thoughts like? Does anyone remember from the sixth canto? He lamented and repented and cursed himself. I've done this, I have done that. And this is, look what I've done, look at my consciousness. That is purifying, not in a neurotic way to always be thinking about how terrible we are and self-indulgently just thinking about ourselves 24 hours a day in the name of humility. No, not like that, but lamenting, being conscious of our fallen condition, and that brings the humility that allows us Kirtaniya Sadahari. If we don't go through that stage, how will we actually feel ourselves really needing of shelter? But not just all day long let the mind go round and round, how rotten I am, how bad I am. That's not Krishna consciousness. That's not Krishna consciousness. That's because who are we thinking of? We're thinking about ourselves all the time. So they were lamenting, oh, I cannot go with Krishna. This is just transcendental ecstasy. Thus, Vishwanath continues, thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead is relating the words of them which arise out of ecstatic sentiment. In actuality, birth as a tree in Vrindavan is fit to be prayed for even by persons like Brahma, as we just heard that prayer. It should be understood that it is not actually the consequence of any offense. Perhaps we can go on to the sixth text. Would you be able to sing that? More of the greeting that greeted Krishna and Balaram as they entered the forest. I'll just tell you one comment in advance about the verse we're now going to hear of Sanatana Goswami. He says that Krishna speaks this verse while pointing his divine finger. So let's hear what Krishna says as he's pointing his divine finger. And I think there's a painting of this. And it may even show Krishna pointing his divine finger. Not in this book that I have before me. Yes, text 6. Why don't you sing it one more time and everyone else can try their best to join in. 8-te. 8-te means these. Now he's moving from the trees to the bees. Alina means bees. Tava, your, yasho, glories. Akila loka tirtam, gayanta. These bees, he's pointing his finger at the bees and saying, these bees are chanting your glories. And that, actually, makes the place a place of pilgrimage. Akila loka tirtam. Let us read that over here. That Tirtham, the place of pilgrimage, Akila Loka, for all the worlds, they are chanting your glories, Adi Purusha. Now he's directly calling Balaram Adi Purusha. Oh, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Adi Purusha, and therefore these bees are chanting your glories, which make the entire world into a holy Tirtha. What hint do you get from that? About preaching throughout the world, and what makes a temple. This is what it is. And what is management supposed to facilitate? It's to manage to make continuous the chanting of Krishna's names, the kirtan, the spreading of his glories. Prabhupada explained this also in explaining Tandira Charana Sevi Bhakta Sanivas Janame Janame Hoy E Abilas. This is what Prabhupada's society is supposed to facilitate and do continuously and spread and spread and spread the chanting of Krishna's glories. Kirtaniyas Param Vijayate Si Krishna Sankirtanam. Let the chanting of Krishna's glories, his names, his qualities, be victorious and spread throughout the world. Because then, if it is actually victorious, the material world is not a material world, but it's a tirtha. Every place where this takes place is a tirtha. Because, I'll read the translation, O original personality, these bees must all be great sages and the most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. That struck me so much. They must be great sages, because this is the activity of great sages. They are chanting your glories, and those glories are themselves a holy place for the entire world. The glories of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, the names of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna. These are the holy places. They turn every place into a holy place. And what is the verse that was used to describe Vidura when he entered Hastinapur after hearing from Maitreya Muni, Tirtha Korvanti Tirthani Stena Gada, because you are carrying Krishna in your heart, the holder of the club in your heart. Krishna who holds the Gada, the club in your heart. And what is coming out of your mouth is the glories of he you are holding in your heart. You are a moving place of pilgrimage. And is where was I reading this? Maybe it's that. And this is really what Mahaprabhu did. Yes, it was in one of Mahaprabhu's pastimes. He turned every place where he walked when he was walking to Gaya. Do you remember that? He turned every place he walked into a holy place of pilgrimage. And that's what Mahaprabhu did. And that's what Thakur Haridas did. There is one ISKCON temple in a place called Haridaspur, just on the border of Bangladesh and West Bengal, right opposite Benapole, which Haridas Thakur stopped there for, I think it was one day. The village is now called Haridaspur. And it is a place of pilgrimage because Haridas Thakur stayed there. And what did Prabhupada do? He traveled throughout the world and made holy places out of the Bowery, out of the village, the East Village, 26 Second Avenue. It is not a very beautiful area. He made it into a tirtha. So many places throughout the world. Because why? And I actually had the experience of this one. I traveled with Prabhupada in 1976, and very fortunately, and he was very strong with me, and I'd never done any deity worship prior to this time because I was living in Hong Kong and the movement was just starting. I'd never been in a place where there was an established temple and deities. And then after being with Prabhupada for the first time in Dallas, Texas, does anyone know the name of the deities in Dallas? Kalachandri. He's big and very, very beautiful, like a blackish moon, his face. And when I walked on the altar, which was the first altar, actually, where there were worship deities for the first time, without any premeditation or thought, I walked on, and there was a feeling on there, and I'm mostly a head type of person, but the feeling was so obvious on that altar. It struck me a special sweetness. And as we walk into Vrindavan, there is a special sweetness. So I walked on that altar, there was a special sweetness. And the first thing that struck me, this is the same sweetness that it was like being with Prabhupada, because I had just been with him. And then I got a glimpse of why Prabhupada was Prabhupada. Why was he? Because what was his secret of being so attractive and sweet and so inspiring and forceful and able to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world? Because the sweetness of Radha and Krishna, the sweetness of Vrindavan, was the sweetness of his consciousness that he was carrying in his heart. And what came out of his mouth was that. And therefore, a place of pilgrimage. If we want to be holy saints and sages, this is what we have to do. And this takes deep purity. It takes everything. Because the glories, these glories of Krishna are Krishna. They are not different from him. And preaching actually is a very simple thing. And Prabhupada continuously made it appear effortless. It was simply an opening of the mouth and an opening, oh, let's put it the other way, it's an opening of the heart. And what is in the heart comes out the mouth. So if one, whatever devotion, whatever bhakti one has, whatever little bit it has or a big bit it has, that's what preaching is. It's a different energy. Bhakti is not of this world. Goloketa prema dana hari nama sankirtana. It is not of this world. Devotional service is not of this world. And preaching is actually not of this world either. Therefore, Krishna shakti nahi vina tarpravartana. There's an energy of Krishna's. It's a sharing of that energy that comes from the heart of the devotee out of his mouth. And when materialistic people hear this, which is the glories of Krishna that the devotee has kept in his heart, the life, the jewels, his life experiences in devotional service, the weight of that, it touches people and they are attracted. That's what it means to be preaching, to preach without having anything. Isn't you can't do it. So therefore Prabhupada said, if all you can say is, oh, I like this movement, or these boys and girls are doing very nicely, this chanting is very nice, they're doing nicely, if that's the realization, if one says that, it will have potency. So Prabhupada was carrying Radha and Krishna. And therefore everything that came out of his mouth was connected to that. So I'll read this verse again so we don't get lost from it. Oh, this is Krishna pointing with his hand. These bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you, the bees, by following you along the path and chanting your glories. Bees are attracted to honey, to sweetness, to pollen, to fragrance. And therefore, what is sweeter than Krishna and Balaram as they go through the forest with their cowherd boys? They're following Krishna, they're following Balaram. They're chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. Though you have disguised yourself, there's the word gudam vane. You have hidden yourself. Krishna's talking about himself. Because he's Adi Purusha. He's calling Balaram Adi Purusha, but he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's hidden himself in this forest, playing with his friends, walking around out of his sweet will, without shoes, decorating the dust of Vrindavan with the club, with the lotus, with the lightning bolt, with the barley corn, with the chakra. He's decorating the forest of Vrindavan with his lotus footprints, hiding himself, doing what he wants, because this is what gives him pleasure. Everything else for the pleasure of the world. So many people are praying to him, give me this, give me that. But this is what gives him pleasure, to be with his... This is what gives everyone pleasure, to be with the ones they love the most. This is what gives Krishna pleasure, to be with those who love him the most and he loves the most. This is the residence of Vrindavan. Be they trees, be they bees, be they Govardhan Hill, whatever. Krishna loves Vrindavan, therefore Padam Ekam Nagachati. He does not take one step out of Vrindavan. Though if you disguise yourself within this forest, you have hidden yourself within this forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. Now, this Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a very hidden comment on this. In the last line of the purport here, it's very interesting, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur doesn't expand it too much, but enough to pique our interest. I'll read the purport. This is about the bees again. The word gudam is significant in this verse. It indicates that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form, what does gudam mean?
Hidden.
Of Krishna or Balaram appears like an ordinary human being within the material world. Great sages always recognize the Lord as the Supreme Absolute Truth. All the transcendental forms of Godhead are eternal and full of bliss and knowledge, exactly the opposite of our material bodies, which are temporary and full of miseries and ignorance. One meaning of the word tirtha is the means for crossing beyond material existence. Simply by hearing the glories of the Supreme Lord or by chanting them, one immediately comes to the spiritual platform beyond material existence. Thus, the Lord's transcendental glories are here described as a tirtha for everyone in the world. The word gayanta indicates that great sages give up their vows of silence and other selfish processes to glorify the activities of the Supreme Lord. Real silence means not to speak nonsense, to limit one's verbal activities to those sound statements and discussions relevant to the loving service of the Supreme Lord. The word anaga, what does anaga mean? Aga, like Agasura, sinful asura, sin asura. Anaga means sinless. So the word anaga indicates that Lord Balaram was not disturbed by the bees who were constantly following him, anupatam. The Lord blessed them by saying, O bees, come into my confidential grove and feel free to taste its fragrance. That's the last line of the purport. But what it exactly means, what is he telling the bees, and who is speaking this? Oh, bees, come into my confidential grove and feel free to taste its fragrance. So let's read Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment on this. This is to text 6. And most of Sanatana Goswami's comment is included in the purport. His comment is short. The bees are worshipping him, following his path in pursuit of the fragrance of his bodily limbs. Now, who is Krishna speaking about? He's pointing, he's speaking about Balaram, but who is he really speaking about? He's talking about himself. The bees are worshipping him, following his path in pursuance of the fragrance of his bodily limbs. Thus, they do not abandon you in this forest, even though you are sometimes hidden for the purpose of your pastimes, invisible even to your associates. O Anaga means that you do not pay regard to their offense of going there. So when Krishna is performing his most intimate pastimes that even some of his other associates cannot see, the bees, attracted to the fragrance of Krishna's limbs, do not leave Krishna. And this is offensive because they're bees, but an O Anaga means that you do not pay regard to their offense of going there. Therefore, these bees are the most important of your devotees, great sages whose nature is to meditate upon your intimate pastimes. Thus hints are given of the Lord's grace upon them. Just hints. O bees, come into my confidential grove and feel free to taste its fragrance. So there is a hint of the Krishna performing pastimes in the groves of Vrindavan with the gopis there. And the bees, because they're so attracted, even though it's inappropriate, they go there because of their attraction. But yet, due to Krishna's mercy, they are still considered anaga, sinless. All right, you come in. He's inviting them because their attraction is so great. The word mukya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, if you look at the word by means, these devotees, their mukya, the most intimate pastimes, even though they are hidden. So we are so fortunate that Sukadeva Goswami has opened up his heart. Sutta Goswami has opened up his heart. Srila Vyasadeva has opened up his heart. Mahaprabhu has opened up his heart. Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada. And we, by their association, perhaps even though hearts that are hard like stone, they will melt by that association, our hearts will flow. And that which is most natural to the living entity, to all of us, will flow out also. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj Ki.